Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. I don't know how many of you have spent time in an old-growth forest, right? But it's an experience. I mean, walking among trees, whatever they are, whether it's redwoods and sequoias on California's northern coast or, you know, a few stands of old-growth cypress in southeastern U.S. swamps or any place where the trees are really old and really big, it's like a cathedral. I mean, you can kind of just feel this feeling in a place like that where the trees are really tall and have a huge canopy that covers the sky. You know, it's really something else. So trees like that are among the most iconic trees on earth, and they're getting rarer. I mean, there's the legendary cedars of Lebanon, and then there's ancient baobab trees out on the African plain, and some of these things are thousands of years old. My guest is named David Millark. He's a nursery owner in Copemish, Michigan. I think I said that right. This is a guy who had an idea and who made it a reality, like a lot of people on American Variety who have a dream that other people think is undoable or crazy, and they just proceed ahead and they succeed at it. Welcome, David.
It's an honor and a pleasure to be here, Court.
David is the co-founder of something called the Champion Tree Project International, which has grown in the last few years into the Archangel Ancient Tree Archive. And so he and his colleagues are getting a lot of attention lately for what they do, which is basically to collect genetic material from champion trees, and it was the biggest, most successful trees that have lived of a certain type, even if they are just stumps, right? As long as there's something alive in there, and they're making clones of the genetic material in those trees and replanting those clones to restore the world's ancient forests and put them to work cleansing the environment and absorbing carbon dioxide, and you know, which is the greenhouse gas, and doing all kinds of other things in addition to just restoring this natural kind of legacy of what remains of what was once a great part of the natural world. So, David, why don't you just kind of go ahead and tell us more about what the Archangel Ancient Tree Archive does?
Well, for the last 20 years, we've crisscrossed the United States, Canada, some European countries, looking for the largest, oldest of each species of trees. Here in the United States, we have 826 different species of trees. So we went in search of the largest and the oldest of each of those species in mind to clone those trees, to have exact genetic fingerprints, to plant in archival living libraries and preserve the genetics of the very last of these ancient giants. Here in the United States, 98% of our old-growth forest has been cut down, 98%. So we only have 2% left. In Europe, there's less than that. So we can see the handwriting on the wall where someday where all of our old-growth forest will be gone and we'll lose the genetics of those trees that have not been studied.
I know that on December 4th of 2012, you and your group, David, began planting young saplings cloned from, I guess, 28 of the largest and oldest redwoods and sequoias in California, and you're planting them on a remote coastal site in southern Oregon. So tell us about that experience. It's got a lot of press, you know, books been written, and lots of media around the world about what you're doing. That must have been some experience to really start to plant those redwoods.
Well, it was the culmination of a 20-year quest to clone the largest, oldest living redwoods and giant sequoias, which are around 3,000 years old. They were 1,000 years old when Jesus walked the earth, to try and clone those and rebuild the world's first redwood old-growth forest. Most people don't know that 95% of our redwoods out in California have been cut down. That leaves us 5% of the old-growth of the largest, oldest living things on earth. Well, we spent years sending out climbers, climbing these things, and trying to break through the barrier of formerly the largest, oldest redwood that was cloned successfully by universities was 80 years old. Well, we set our sights on the largest, oldest, which are about 3,000 years old, and most of these trees' trunks have a diameter of 24 to 35 feet across.
Wow.
They're giants. Well, I'm happy to report we were successful. Archangel has done that. We've cloned those in Port Orford, Oregon, on the Ocean Mountain Preserve. We did indeed plant all 250 of the clones of 28 different trees that are all 2,000 to 3,000 years old and about 30 foot in diameter. We have begun to rebuild the world's first old growth redwood forest.
Why do you pick these stumps rather than living trees?
Well, we were shooting for the largest, tallest, biggest living redwoods and giant sequoias that we could find, and we were searching, by the way, private property that formerly had never been searched before. Most people have seen these large trees in state and national parks, but not really on private property. And one day in Northern California, my son Jake, he was with Michael Taylor, probably the greatest redwood tree hunter alive, and Tom Broadhagen, and we mentioned the fact that we had seen some tremendously large stumps of trees on private land that were overgrown, and we found out that they were lost, and we were wondering, Michael, could you lead us to any of these great stumps of the trees that were cut down 100 or 150 years ago? So that started the quest of trying to find stumps of trees that were a third to half again as big as anything alive today. And in a valley in Northern California, we found a grove of trees that had once grown that were cut down in the 1880s and 90s that were 35 foot across the trunk, folks. Most redwoods in the forest are 10 to 12 feet in diameter. The really, really big old ones are 20, 22 feet. That really, those are very, very rare. Here we came across a valley of 24, 28, and 35-foot diameter stumps of coast redwoods. Began the process of trying to bring them back to life, to replant them again, and that's some of the trees that we planted in Port Orford in December at Ocean Mountain Reserve.
I think that the biggest sequoia is called the General Sherman. Are these trees that you've been working with bigger than that, which is the biggest tree, I guess, alive today?
Well, General Sherman is a giant sequoia. It has a diameter trunk that's 25 foot across. The sequoias in the Lost Grove that's in Jim Robbins' book, The Man Who Planted Trees, it's about our quest to rebuild the world's first redwood old growth forest and others around the world. We found a grove on top of the Sierra Nevada Range in the Southern District at 8,000 feet that a 91-year-old man owned 700 acres up there and wouldn't let anybody on. We found that man through some people that were looking for big trees. We talked to him, and he said he would allow us to go up the mountain with him. Native Americans had put the ashes of their dead up there, and he didn't want to disturb them. We found a grove of giant sequoias. Now, General Sherman is the biggest tree by volume on Earth, 25-foot diameter. We found giant sequoias 30-foot in diameter, 5 feet wider, much wider than General Sherman, the largest giant sequoia on Earth, in groves up there. So our climbers braved climbing them, my son Jake and Merrill Marsh. They climbed them. We looked for tissue, brought them down. We said, well, we're going to do our best to try and make these things put on their own roots, but we were warned that there was an 80-year glass ceiling that had never been gone through trying to clone giant sequoias. 80 years old, it won't work after that. It's impossible.
Hmm.
Well, these trees are at least 3,000 years old, and I'm happy to report every one that we tried, we were successful with.
How tall would a tree with a 30 to 35-foot diameter be?
400 feet, 40 stories.
Wow. So when you come upon these huge old stumps, do they have to have little sprouts coming out of them? I mean, do they have to have some sign of life left? They can't just be totally dead.
No, they couldn't be totally dead. Even though these trees were cut down 120 to 150 years ago, out of their roots there's these basal root sprouts that had come up through the ground that were growing, but we weren't positive they were from that tree, so we searched the trunks. And the bark on these trees is 18 inches thick. Well, after 150 years, the bark kind of decays, so we look for life, attachments of green living things where the bark was and under the bark. And on 13 of these stumps of the coast redwoods that we ran into, we tried to clone 13 of those with that life we found, and we were successful. And by the way, on Ocean Mountain Reserve in Port Orford, we invite you to go take a look at the world's first redwood old growth forest. Just bear in mind those trees were probably 400 feet tall approaching 3,000 years old, somewhere in that range, and much, much larger and older than anything alive, and nobody even knew they were there. So that was a gift. That project is a gift to the world, a genetic archive, and a gift of what we can do to repair some of the damage that we've done here on Earth.
That's incredible. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're here talking with David Millark, who is a nursery owner in Michigan, but more to the point of our show, is the founder and general runner of an organization called the Archangel Ancient Tree Archive, and they are cloning huge ancient old-growth trees from around the world, and here we're talking about redwoods and sequoias on the West Coast, and making little saplings grow from these once enormous trees. He was talking about stumps 35 feet across that were cut a century ago and making new little plants from them and replanting those. So, David, how do you actually do that? Are they clones in the microbiological sense in a petri dish, or how do you do what you do as far as the plant material?
Well, first off, Court, let's start with this, that almost every species of tree on Earth are self-cloning. And when we clone these trees, we do not rearrange the genetics at all. We just assist the trees in doing what they do naturally. But of course, if 95 or 98% of them were cut down and dead, we were not able to do that. So on the living trees, we send climbers up 200-300 feet, send them up to the end of the branches, and they gather living tissue to bring down, which we bring to one of our propagation facilities, either in Monterey, California, or here in Colton, Michigan. And we've been doing this for 20 years. Every day that we go to work, we're trying to do something that's never been done or classified as impossible. But we're getting pretty good at it, Archangel. And we try by rooted cuttings, or we try with micropropagation, which is the glass jars with the little teeny buds of the trees in agar. There's several methods that we try. We try all of them. And we probably try them more than once, thousands of different formulas, to try and get one or two to grow. And after you get one or two of those to sprout roots and to grow, you can clone off that tree, and it'll still be the exact genetic fingerprint of the 3,000-year-old parent. It is that tree.
What's so special about them being these huge champion trees? Are they superior to sort of more average trees, do you think? I mean, why do you select those even though it's so hard to do?
Well, we don't know if they're superior or not, but we do know this. They have the entire genetic history of that tree for thousands of years intact. Okay, so if you take a seedling from any other tree, gather seeds, it's a lot easier, a lot less expensive. You only get 50% of the genetics of that parent. Those trees had to cross-pollinate with other trees of their kind, and so you'll have a 50% genetic history of that tree. We're shooting for 100% genetic history going back thousands of years, so that could be studied and find out how in the heck is it they grow that long. It's like, let's take coast redwoods. Most coast redwoods, the majority of them, don't live to be 1,000 years old. Some, very, very few, live to be 2,000. 2,500 years old. We don't know why. I think it's worth scientific investigation to find out how they were able to take a normal 1,000-year lifespan and multiply that to 2,000 to 2,500 years and what we might learn from that, Court.
How fast do the trees grow once you do get one to successfully propagate, David? Once you get a little sprout going, how fast does it grow?
They really grow fast. In the case of the giant sequoias and the redwoods, in San Francisco, in Orinda, which is a suburb and a subdivision in Orinda, some of these trees were cloned and planted in the subdivision 28, 20, 30 years ago. Hmm. They're now 110, 120 feet tall, and you can't touch your hands if you put your arms around the trunks. They grow about 10 feet a year, and they stack carbon like crazy. The fastest carbon stackers on the planet.
Oh, that's really surprising. They grow that fast, and it's encouraging that the ones you're planting could, in 50 years, be a serious grove of trees. I live in East Tennessee, and our flagship station for American Variety is WETS at East Tennessee State University, and I noticed in doing a little research before the show that the state of Tennessee has a champion tree program that was started in the mid-70s where people can measure trees of all different species and turn in the measurements, and the state keeps track of which are the largest specimens of those species of trees in the state, which is pretty interesting. And I wonder, probably a lot of other states have that kind of thing, too. It's interesting.
Yes, they do. There's almost every state, all 50 states, have state lists. There's even some national lists. We've used those in this country, over in Ireland, England, and other countries for guides of where to find these trees. But the problem is that these lists were put together by people who thought they knew what species of tree that was, and they kind of guessed at the size. And a lot of these trees, when we go to investigate them, are either cut down and gone, misidentified as to what type of tree they are, or they've kind of puffed up the measurements a little bit to try and get on that list. So they're a guide, but there's a lot of variance to their accuracy, Court. But they are helpful, and they're almost every country and every state here in the United States has those lists.
Well, that's interesting. People get competitive even if they're talking about trees. So going back to your project, the recent project with redwoods and sequoias that you're replanting, when we think of those trees, we tend to think of California. Why did you pick the Oregon location?
Well, we picked the Oregon location because it's a thing called climate change. It's starting to rear its head. Wherever you're listening to this, you probably have memories of last summer, how hot and dry it got, how many crops were lost, how many farmers had to sell their cattle, their sheep, whatever, because they can't feed them because of the drought. So there's a new method called assisted migration, where you take trees or animals that have lived for thousands of years where they have, but now it's getting too hot, too dry, and they're starting to die. So with assisted migration, we move these trees about 100 miles north of their normal range into a cool, moist mountainside where the fogs, which redwoods still like, there's still fog there, which a third of the fog along the California coast no longer is. It's cooler, it's more moist, it has a high annual precipitation of rainfall there, so it's our best bet at Ocean Mountain Reserve in Port Orford, where these trees to mimic the climate that they were raised in. It's just getting hotter and drier everywhere, so this would be a safe haven there to protect these great trees on into the future. A best guess.
So I imagine the same logic applies no matter what kinds of trees you're propagating anywhere in the world. And so I would think that it's tricky. You're not just replanting them necessarily where they grew before, but you've got to find new land to put them on. I would imagine that finding that land where somebody can make it available, whether it's a government entity or a private homeowner, is tricky too. How does that work?
Well, you put the word up through the media that you're looking for a place, 5 acres, 10 acres, 200 acres, to plant an archival living library or a genetic library for these trees. And when people read about it or hear about it, you start getting emails and phone calls saying, I have land available, or I know where there's land. But all over the world, assisted migration is becoming more and more the norm of helping these trees that can't move themselves or animals or whatever that are really threatened out because of climate change. Finding a place where, usually a northern more latitude, where it's cooler and more moist, where hopefully they'll make it through the next 50-100 years of this climate change scenario.
So apart from the Oregon project, you must have planted a lot of trees in other places. Give us some examples of other places around the country or the world where you've done a little of this.
Well, if you go to Archangel Ancient Trees website, and that's ancienttreearchive.org, ancienttreearchive.org, we're a nonprofit, you'll be able to see the states and the countries in which trees and photographs of these great trees that we've cloned and we're working on. We've worked a lot in the Washington, D.C., Virginia area. We did George Washington's last 11 trees he planted. We worked at Mount Vernon. Then we went on to do Teddy Roosevelt's trees at Sagamore Hill, the presidential collection. 2 years ago, we were over in Ireland, and we searched that country high and low to try and find some of the very last old-growth 1,000-year-old Irish oaks. We found 22 in that country, and we attempted to clone those, and it worked. And we have 1,000-year-old oaks now available for the people of Ireland to reforest themselves. Some of the next trees that we're going after, besides the trees here in the United States, are the kauri trees in New Zealand, which are as big as the giant sequoias, but of 5 million acres of the kauri trees in New Zealand, there's only 11 trees left. Then we would like to do the cedars of Lebanon, which is probably the most referred to tree in the Bible, Quran, and religious books. They're threatened and endangered, to my understanding. But we're a nonprofit, and we need help. We can only do as much as we can fundraise to do for these projects. So if anybody has an interest in what we do, just go to our website, ancienttreearchive.org, and you can see these trees, see our projects, and we sure could use some help.
Well, to call it a worthwhile project is a ridiculous understatement. It's an unbelievable concept. It's so great, and for one private individual to have started it, it's the kind of thing that governments typically do, and you've gotten it going and gotten interest from government, too. I'm wondering, do you sell these trees, David? I mean, is it possible that people can go on your website and buy a 2-foot-tall champion tree of something that comes from their region that could live in their yard?
No, we don't sell any of our trees. They're way, way too valuable for that, and there's too few of them. What we do is we offer these trees for financial support for Archangel Ancient Trees. We can offer you a tree, a small grove of trees. We can even, if you have a corporation or business, we will plant you an entire old-growth forest for financial support so that we can keep our work going around the world.
Will there come a time when, let's say, in municipalities, if they wanted to have some trees like this in their park, that they could obtain them from you?
Absolutely. We are doing municipalities. New York City, we're doing some in California, some in the Midwest. Yes, anybody that's listening from a municipality that's interested in putting some of these trees, just get a hold of us through our website, ancienttreearchive.org, and we'd be glad to help guide you of how we could do this. If you'll help support our work, we'll help make sure these trees get into wherever you're listening.
And you are listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with David Millark, the founder and organizer of the Archangel Ancient Tree Archive, who are planting champion trees that are cloned offspring, let's call it, of huge, huge trees that were, in most cases, cut down a century ago of various kinds of species of trees around the world. And we've been talking mainly about an effort out in the Oregon coast to plant a couple hundred redwoods and sequoias that were cloned from trees in that region. David, this is such an amazing idea. It seems kind of obvious once you think of it, but I don't think people had thought of it before you. How did you get started, and when did you start the project, and who's involved in it with you?
Well, the project has grown to a really large group of people, volunteers, really in this country and other countries of the world, that volunteer their time and help. We have a really great core group here in northern Michigan and Kokomish, Michigan, at our research facility, and I'd like to say that I co-founded Archangel, and I co-founded the Champion Tree Project. I wasn't the entire founder. I'm one of the co-founders. It was really out of need. 20 years ago, we were starting to hear rumblings about climate change, about the environmental disasters in our oceans, our Great Lakes, the Superfund sites that were popping up all over the United States, the dead zones in our oceans. And the trees that were being offered across this country and most other countries were what I call French poodles, or trees that were never really looked at for longevity. They had a pretty red leaf, or they had a really pretty flower, or something that made them very attractive for a very short period of time. It was about that time, 20 years ago, I found out that the average lifespan of a street-planted tree here in America is 7 to 10 years.
Wow.
So as we take down the entire ecosystems, the entire forest, to urbanize this planet, or as our cities expand and grow, we're destroying the entire ecosystem, not just the trees, and trying to reforest with trees that last 7 to 10 years. That is not going to help reverse the environmental challenges that we all find ourselves in. So My sons and I were pruning one day here on our shade tree farm in northern Michigan. And my oldest son, Jared, who was 14 at the time, said, "Dad, why don't we clone those great big trees and you and Grandpa take us around to? Aren't those several hundred years old?" And that's actually how the spark came for this project. And we started that and began that, and we haven't looked back since.
That's a great story. Came from a child. It's wonderful. You know, it's you talked about the ecological value of these trees, and that's incontrovertible. I mean, you know, trees are kind of the filters for the world in terms of all kinds of gases and toxins and pollutants and so on. And to the extent that trees disappear, so will our world eventually disappear. But to me, it's also beyond that, let's call it practical value. They're also a tiny remnant of the primeval world that existed before humans kind of brought it under control to exploit it for our own needs. And, you know, basically they're natural museums that I think we should preserve just for their own value, the way we would try to preserve rare and disappearing species of animals. You know, they're just such a beautiful part of nature, and you're doing more than your part, more than almost anybody as an individual to preserve those.
Well, Archangel Ancient Trees invites everybody that's listening to please get a hold of us, and we can help show you how you can help your yard, your city, your village, your school, whatever it might be, and help that ecosystem you live in that needs it so desperately right now. This is a project made for the world. This is a project that applies to everybody. This is a project whose time has come. And I really would encourage everybody to go to our website, see how our project can help you wherever you're listening. We will do that. We best do something at this time. By deforesting the planet the way we have, it's no different than shooting all the elephants on Earth just for their ivory. It's no different than the devastation in a lot of parts of our ecosystem, our natural world, that through really ignorance or greed or not looking forward ahead enough, we've come to a time now where we need these things. Humans need these trees. If we don't reforest this planet and rebuild the filter system, I think that our grandchildren will not look very kindly or favorably towards us now when we had the chance to help take a run at this climate change thing and some of these just awful environmental challenges that we all face that we didn't do anything about it. Well, you can now, folks.
David, we're out of time. It's been fascinating talking with you. I want to give the name of the book that you mentioned at the beginning of the show. It's written by a New York Times science writer named Jim Robbins. It's two B's in the middle of Robbins. The book is titled The Man Who Planted Trees, Lost Groves, Champion Trees, and an Urgent Plan to Save the Planet. And as David mentioned, the website is ancienttreearchive.org. So you can go there and you can donate and you can read all about the project. There are lots of beautiful pictures, and it's really an amazing project that David Millark has co-founded and gotten off the ground and is running with. David, thank you so much for being on with us in American Variety. It's been fascinating.
Clark, it's really been my pleasure.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.